From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made 2 weeks from tomorrow, June 18th. It's Rock Transit Day, a day when all of Rochester is asked to go car-free. Could you do it? Could you get to work or get around without a car for an entire day? The average person drives 37 miles per day, 13,476 miles per year. This hour, we're exploring why going car-free matters to our panel. We'll ask if it matters to you and what a real multimodal community would look like. We'll also ask them if we're being unfairly harsh to the automobile, as some of our listeners have told us. And those who rely on the car every day say maybe we're being a little tough on them. Well, so we'd love for you to join the conversation. Tell us about how much you rely on the automobile and whether you think you could give it up for a day or a week or for a while. Getting to work. My guest for the hour, Mike Governale, is the president of Reconnect Rochester. Mike, nice to see you.
Thanks, Evan.
And John Lamb's here with Reconnect Rochester, and he's the Rock Transit Day Project Manager. John, nice to have you.
Thank you for having us here.
Bill Carpenter, CEO of RTS. Bill, nice to see you again.
Good to see you again, Evan.
And Hugh Keurig is the Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. Hugh, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Looking at the numbers, again, 37 miles a day is what the average American drives, according to a number of organizations that was the basis for my research. But what's interesting to me, Mike Governale, is it's not just 37 miles a day. We're driving almost twice of what we drove in 1980, but miles of public roads have barely increased, 6%. So since 1980, in the last 35 years, we only have 6% more roads, but we're driving almost double what we did. What does that say to you?
Mm-hmm. It could be any number of factors coming into play. I think overall vehicle miles traveled has actually leveled off or, in fact, gone down since the recession, 2007-2008. But perhaps the amount of driving that families are doing, workers are doing, maybe their car trips are getting a little longer, maybe they're driving from meeting to meeting, or their commute might be getting longer. But overall, VMTs have gone down since 2008, and we like that sign.
Okay, so the big jump was from 1980 to maybe the mid-aughts, and we've seen a change in the last decade. Bill Carpenter, RTS, are you those numbers ring true to you at RTS?
The increase in ridership we've seen the last 8 or 10 years certainly reflects that. And going back to your question, what does it mean that people are driving twice as many miles on the same roads? We don't see it here in Rochester, but we see it around the country where commutes are much longer and where people around the country are moving to alternate forms of transportation, whether it's walking, biking, public transportation, rail for those communities that have it. But people are much more receptive to getting out of their car and finding another way to get from where they start, where they need to go, and back again.
Now, you're right about the commute time. I mean, Rochester has that long cliche, 20 minutes to get anywhere, and that's assuming you're driving a car. But to Bill's point, we may not see the commute time, but when you've got essentially double the traffic in the last 35 years on essentially the same roads, you think about infrastructure impact and maintaining the roads in their current state costs $101 billion a year. And we're looking at infrastructure improvements that are required around this state. We've talked about bridges, regular roadway repair. Shouldn't that be a concern too, Bill?
It should be. And certainly what you see out at the University of Rochester, where Eastman Kodak had great infrastructure set up for Kodak Park, those jobs in our community are centered around the medical center. At the University of Rochester, their research labs, their laser labs, and the infrastructure investments that are needing to be made there and have been made there to make that a more workable site. As CityGate opens this week, just a tremendous amount of traffic moving from one area of infrastructure to another, and where public transit on the same infrastructure can take volumes of people. RTS is trying to change and leverage our investments that used to be made to Kodak Park and drive more buses and more customers to the University of Rochester and City Gate area.
Well, and let me ask Hugh Keurig, who's the Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. Yes, more congestion, but you also have College Town. And when you're down there, once you actually park your car, in many ways, it feels like it could be its own mini walkable community down there. What's the goal?
Well, that is the goal, is to make our campus as pedestrian-friendly as we possibly can, not only internal circulation, whether that be at the medical center, whether it be at the river campus, but also to make pedestrian access, to College Town and to the campuses more user-friendly. And that includes how you get to those destinations, whether it be via bus or bicycle or pedestrian access to those campuses. That is our goal, is to make it as user-friendly as in those modes as possible.
I don't know if you've pulled the workers down at URMC, for example, but I imagine if you wanted to not use an automobile at all, in other words, if you wanted to find a way to bus to work and then spend the day, maybe you walk to lunch, you walk to pick up coffee, that is, it seems to me, a place that you could not use a car at all in this community. And I imagine some people on campus do.
Yes, they do. We have a good number of our employees that do take the bus. Bicycle is a very popular mode, especially this time of year. For those that live close by, walking is popular as well. But the intent is that we cannot sustain parking on our campus and provide every employee a parking space. And so we really need to promote alternative transportation. And that's how we came up with our UR Connections program, which is a way to encourage people to investigate and invest in those alternative transportations.
When it comes to those parking spaces, do you have to explain to people on campus, employees, et cetera, that it doesn't work this way where everyone's got a spot? It's that simple. Is it a culture change? How has that gone?
It's a culture change, but the program that we've created that provides what we call occasional parking for those that take the bus, we'll continue to provide them 26 free one-day parking passes for the day they actually absolutely need to bring a car to campus. But the intent is to focus the emphasis on the alternative transportation, the bus, bicycle, carpool, vanpool, pedestrian movement. That's where we really are trying to move our mindset on the campus.
All right, so I want to hit that point again just to make sure I understand it. That's very interesting. Am I interpreting it incorrectly? Did you say that if you're an employee, you get 26 one-day passes for parking in a calendar year?
In a calendar year.
Okay.
And that is correct. If you are a user of one of the alternative modes, yes,
okay,
we'll give you 26 free one-day passes just so. As an example, carpool, I have a doctor's appointment. I can't do the carpool that day. I'll have to drive in separately. They can use one of their passes for that purpose.
So it's a couple days a month it comes out to.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, you're getting to work in alternative ways. And how have the employees and the people using those alternative forms of transportation and those one-day passes, how has that gone? Has it been effective?
It's been very effective. We have a very robust carpool program that provides discounts not only for the parking pass that the participants enjoy, but also the occasional parking. The same thing is true on the transit side. Bill has done a great job, his staff and the system, in investing in transit opportunities to the Med Center campus, the River campus. So I think we're up to almost 400 trips a day.
Yeah.
That are via bus on weekday that are coming into the Med Center campus. That's a lot of opportunities for people to take advantage of the bus as their mode of choice to get to their work.
An indication, Bill, that RTS is responding to supply and demand, and where organizations like URMC are encouraging alternative forms of transportation, you can step up routes if you need to.
What's great about the URMC campus is everyone there doesn't work 8 to 5. You've got a workload at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, health customers coming in throughout the day, people visiting their friends and relatives in the hospital throughout the day, nursing students. So there's a tremendous volume of different types of customers. So throughout the day, to have we've got about 8 of our routes that deviate to make sure they hit that URMC campus. And as we broke the news on this show recently, we're making an investment to have not shelters, but stations, heated, well-lit, signage of when the next bus is coming, bike lockers, safety lights, all connected to the URMC video system so people can safely, comfortably wait for the bus that's going to get them where they need to go. Outside the transit center downtown, which is becoming a big hit with our community the last number of weeks, the URMC campus as our top destination. And by the end of this year, it's going to be much more friendly, comfortable to use that location as your destination or starting point.
All right, but John Lamb, I'm starting to see some comments on Twitter, and John Lamb is not only with Reconnect Rochester, but he's the Rock Transit Day project manager. And I'm going to start on the Rock Transit Day question with Marco's comment on Twitter. Marco writes to us, "It is literally impossible for me not to use a car for a day. Get my kid to and from daycare, myself to and from work, no way. Public transit could make it feasible. I live in Irondequoit, work in Henrietta. I'm open to it, but it can't be done as it stands." That's Marco. And so if you're just joining us, we're talking about upcoming Rock Transit Day, which is June 18th. And John Lamb, is Marco exempt because he works in Henrietta, not Rochester? Is this aimed at City of Rochester? What's the aim of June 18th?
Well, we know that transit is not going to work for everyone, right? Marco is an example of the high-hanging fruit, and there's plenty of low-hanging fruit. So earlier we were talking about the University of Rochester and the Medical Center. So we at Reconnect Rochester know people who live in the city, and yet they purchase a parking permit that does not let them park at the Medical Center. Instead, they have to drive 3 miles past Elmwood, past the Medical Center, and park out on Scottsville Road, and then catch a shuttle back in. Mm-hmm. And so they're really kind of getting the worst of all worlds in the winter. They have to shovel their driveway, brush the snow off their car, scrape the ice off, and then drive down snow-clogged roads and past the hospital, and then catch the bus back. They're actually spending another 10 minutes to go past the hospital, and then another waiting for the shuttle, mm-hmm. another however 10, 20 minutes if they don't time it right, and then do the opposite for the reverse. And so transit guru and planner Jarrett Walker once described freedom as the flexibility to change plans and get anywhere when you change plans. And so by doing that, by having a car, it's the ball and chain, and you're locked in, committing an hour a day to moving past where you're going and then having to get your car afterward. So we know that for some people it would work. It's just changing that frame of mind. And that's one of the purposes of Rock Transit Day.
Okay, so listeners, that's the question for Rock Transit Day coming up. Can you give up your car for a day? And again, we're not talking about a Saturday where you're going to read a book and sit on the couch. They've aimed it at a Thursday. It's the middle of the week. Could you give up your car for a weekday, for a day, and find other ways to get to work or get to wherever you need to go, etc.? We'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. So, John, on the 18th, what's the best-case scenario? And you can't say you never don't see any cars on the road, but realistically, for Rock Transit Day, 2 weeks from tomorrow, what are you really hoping for?
That more people use transit and give it a try. One of the other purposes is to reach out to drivers and those who never or seldom ever use transit and ask them to give it a try. Transit is not something that people are born knowing how to use, but it's not hard. And this is just a small incentive to get people to give it a try. And one of the reasons it's on this Thursday is because it actually coincides with National Dump the Pump Day, which is sponsored by the organization for which RTS is a member, and that's APTA, or the American Public Transportation Association. And it's the coalition of bus companies, transit companies across the U.S. And they picked this day because it's close to the summer solstice. It doesn't get dark here until 9:30. And so if you're on a bus and you can't use it, or you can't use a bus during the day, well, you can use it for evening things that are fun.
Okay. Mike Governale, what do you hope to see happen on the 18th? We're talking about transit, but is this also about helping with the mindset? I mean, most of us never even consider the idea of not driving. I don't. I mean, I'm not exempting myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think John hit the nail on the head. A big part of Rock Transit Day is just trying to remove the fear factor, the intimidation, maybe the, you know, the fear of the unknown. You know, in Rochester, you know, we're not known as one of the greatest public transit cities in the world. So, you know, most people, you know, use their car for all their trips every day. And just getting, you know, a group of people, a group of coworkers or friends together to try this crazy thing called Rock Transit Day. Maybe you don't use it to commute to work, but, you know, maybe once you're at work and you're downtown or wherever, maybe you pull together, you know, a bunch of your coworkers who are also participating in Rock Transit Day and take a lunch trip. to some of the activities that we have planned that day. But so I think by Reconnect Rochester reaching out and talking to employers, distributing some educational material, having this conversation on the air, we start to have a broader community discussion, and that allows us to acquaint people with the idea of using public transit, answer some questions that they might have about using the bus, how do I figure out where I need to go, where my bus stop is, that sort of thing, and also just getting the community more involved and out on the street. I think it's less about removing cars from the street and more about seeing more people engaged in their community at street level. I think that's what we're trying to do on Rock Transit Day.
And Rock Transit Day online, where is it online, Mike?
RockTransitDay.com. We made it nice and simple.
RockTransitDay.com. Jennifer and Grace up first. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Oh, hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
This is something that's near and dear to my heart. So I used to live in Rochester, lived here for most of my life. I moved to the West Coast, and I recently came back about a year ago, and Rochester seems to be a city where you're forced to drive, unfortunately, and I'm used to taking all kinds of different options before I came back here. And it's been very disappointing when I've looked several times from many different directions and taking the bus, and it's very disappointing. I looked and taken the bus from Greece to Henrietta, and different times I'm forced to take several buses. What would take me driving 20 to 30 minutes would take me several hours on the bus. You're forced to transfer downtown, and maybe it's getting better now, but right now most people want to have to sit in downtown to wait for another bus. And, with service, there's not a lot of service in Rochester, and if funding is an issue, which is always an issue, then we can look at maybe gradually increasing what the cost is to take the bus, even 25 cents at a time. I was told when I moved here that the running joke is it only takes a dollar to take the bus, but it should be for where it takes you, and that's disheartening to hear. There's a lot of things we could be doing in this city. Maybe we are, and maybe I'm just not aware of them, things like partner with employers, see if we can offer subsidized bus passes to the employees so we can take the bus at a more affordable rate or even increase the service. Partner with employers to incentivize taking alternative commute modes, give out prizes or something to incentivize people to take the bus or even try it on a more regular basis. We have a lot of festivals in this city. I would love to see RTS at the festivals with an actual bus, showing people how to get on the bus, showing people if they want to take the bike, how to put the bike on the bus if that's an option, giving out route information. I'd love to see more park and rides in this city. We could work with property owners. A lot of parking lots are empty. A lot of churches are empty through the week. Maybe they could get park and rides so more people could take the bus. So those are just some of my ideas. Again, I don't know what could be going on, but I think in this city, unfortunately, you're forced to drive. I know I talked to my coworkers about taking the bus, and they look at me like I'm blue in the face. So I'm just hoping that it'll get better.
Well, Jennifer, thanks for the call. I suspect that your many points are points that this panel has considered at length. And let me start with Bill Carpenter from RTS. Take it wherever you want. She gave you a lot to think about there.
Well, and Jennifer, I appreciate your passion for what it is we do every day. Trying to get from Greece to Henrietta is one of the reasons we are doing a vanpool study. A 40-foot bus is about $100 an hour for us to operate when you take in the cost of the bus and the fuel and the operator and the mechanics. So $100 an hour to get 10 people from Greece to Henrietta or on the park and rides. Our park and ride ridership averages $10 per customer each way. So it's a heavily taxpayer-subsidized system. So we started just a few weeks ago a vanpool study where employers, where groups of individuals can get together and say, one person is going to be responsible for this RTS-owned van that's going to carry 5 or 7 or 12 people. And when you've got 5 or 7 or 12 people that have to work at URMC or have to work at Paychex or have to work at RIT, those folks can get picked up. It's not one person's car with a 2-year-old that you're sitting on their lollipop. It's a RTS-owned vehicle. We take care of the maintenance. We provide a fuel card. So for those low-density trips, a much more economical change. And I think with the Transit Center, with our YouTube channel, Just go YouTube RTS. You find a lot of those tutorials on how to get on the bus, how to pay your fare, how to get the bike on. The idea of being at festivals with one of our buses, it's a great idea, and I'll take that back to our organization.
All right, very good. And on van pooling again, how many different van pools are you studying? And tell us again about some of the details there, Bill.
So we're looking to see, does the concept of van pooling work? In some communities, Des Moines, Iowa is an example, that transit agency has over 100 vehicles. So now these are $20,000, $25,000, $35,000 vehicles that are owned by the transit agency. Everyone pays $80 to $100 to be part of the van pool.
$80 to $100
per month.
Per month.
Except for the driver. The driver doesn't pay because they're responsible for the vehicle. That's their benefit. We're looking to see, does that concept work? Would a University of Rochester want to take responsibility for 10 or 20 or 30? Would a group in Webster, just individuals, want to take a look at it? So you can go to myrts.com, look for the van pool study, get your input. By the fall, we want to come back to the community and say, gee, our consultant says it's not going to work, or, wow, this is a game changer for people trying to get from an outer ring suburb into the city, or people that live in the city that find it very difficult to get to Xerox Webster and call centers out in Henrietta, that shifts that end late at night. The van pool can be a way to make it much easier for them to use public transportation in a different mode.
How big would the van be? What kind of vehicle?
We're talking about SUV vehicles up to 12-passenger vans.
Okay, and it would be parked or housed where?
At the individual's home.
Okay, at the individual's home. For $80 to $100 a month, you might initially say, boy, that sounds like a lot, but you think about parking that you're not going to be paying, I guess, and you're also thinking about if that precludes you from having to have a vehicle at all, or it really reduces your fuel and own car costs. So I guess all of those things factor into what you would think about paying, right, Bill?
Yeah, a person who's paying $20 or $25 a week for fuel, paying for parking, paying for maintenance, paying for insurance, $80 to $100 to reduce the number of vehicles in your home from 2 to 1. Or even maintain the two but not have the maintenance on the one, it's a very very cost-effective way to use public transportation. We want to see if it'll work here in our community.
And so the website, if you want to check out van pooling or think about getting involved, you still can. What's the website again, Bill?
MyRTS.com.
Okay, Mike, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I thought the caller made a couple of really good points, and one of those was that, I think more employers in the Rochester region could do more to encourage their employees to use alternative forms of transportation. And one of the interesting things that I learned a while ago was that there is a commuter tax benefit. And one of our other panelists might correct me on some of these points, but I believe in 2015 you could set aside up to $130 a month pre-tax income to pay for the cost of public transit. And for drivers, I think that amount is something like $250. So your employer might be paying $250 to subsidize a parking pass in the nearby garage. But they would also work with you to pay for a public transit monthly pass. And I think that's a really, really good tool. And I would recommend you talk to your HR department about that. And if they're amicable, have them contact us for some Rock Transit Day fare cards, and we'll set you up with those.
Andrew and Shilai, Christian and Pittsford, we're coming to you after this short break. Phone calls at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It's toll-free. We have a number of questions that have come in via email and Twitter. We'll get to those as well with our panel as we preview Rock Transit Day. That's June 18th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Organizers asking all of us to think about not driving a car for a day on that Thursday and trying to figure out how would we make changes, how would we get around, what is available that maybe we're not already considering in our own lives. Bill Carpenter is the CEO of RTS. He's here. John Lamb and Mike Governale are here from Reconnect Rochester. Hugh Keurig is the Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. Your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, wine and then beer. We're talking about what we drink, especially the stuff we drink that's made right here in the Finger Lakes and the Rochester region. We're talking about the Rosé Soirée coming up. one of the great wine events of the year, and then Rochester Real Beer Week. How do you define real beer? We'll talk to members from the local beer community. It's all coming up next hour on Connections.
The American Red Cross raised almost $500 million after the 2010 earthquake in Haiti. NPR went to Haiti to find out how they spent it.
They never had a real plan for what they wanted to do in housing.
We still have tents. People should not be living like this still.
That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. This is Andrew in Chilai. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for this great show.
Sure.
Bike lanes. I love what everybody's talking about. I loved what Jennifer said, the marketing ideas of training, you know, teaching people as best you can how to use the bus. Because I think there's a lot of people in the suburbs who are just confounded by parking and the neighborhood's weird and they're just not used to their city. Although when they travel abroad, they say right away, I'm from Rochester, and they haven't seen the High Falls before. But having said that, I had two employers pass that worked in that were located near the canal, and that was the most wonderful commute I can tell you. I would do 9 miles one way on the bike, good weather of course, and sometimes moderately bad, and I would bike in. I would drive my car maybe 2 miles to a place where I could park it, get on the canal trail, and shoot right to work. I'd get there early every day. Of course, I'd have to wash up just a little bit, and not every employer has a shower, so you do the best you can to, you know, to make yourself presentable, and you just do better work that way. However, biking is still a challenge in this town because of the bike lanes and the danger of being on the streets. Does anyone have any comments on that?
Well, Andrew, stay there because what I want to do is your comment right there makes me want to read Aaron's comment from Twitter. I want to see what you think about this. Aaron writes to us, I lived in China and biked everywhere because bike lanes have a physical barrier from car lanes. Painted lines are false safety. What do you think about that, Andrew?
Oh, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. You're constantly wondering who's on their cell phone behind you, you know, and not just cell phones, but just the fact that people make mistakes. And when they're driving around on a motorized throne that is 2,000 pounds, a mistake can really ruin my day on the bike. And so it does make you wonder, and anything that can improve bicycle transportation in this city would greatly improve the situation. One other comment, I also am looking for any kind of work within a mile or two of my house. So that, you know, it doesn't have to be on the canal trail. But the point is seek work as best you can in the radius of your area so you can live cheaper. And as a great capitalist nation, we have thrown so much of our incomes into cars, into stocking our garages full of junk so we can't park in the garage and therefore we have to scrape and do all that stuff in the winter. So there are logical, smart things we can be doing to not only become richer, but also have a better life.
Thank you for the phone call, Andrew. A lot to think about. Let's go to his bike lane comment, and Aaron is well online. What does this panel think about the notion of physical barriers and bike lanes and false safety? Mike Governale?
Well, you know, talking with my cycling friends, I think they would say that the ideal place to bike would be in the street, in the auto lane, where you're most visible. And I'm speaking of Rochester here because we don't have cycle tracks yet. However, bike lanes and cycle tracks do provide additional levels of safety and also comfort for the novice cyclist. And that's what we, you know, that's our ultimate goal is to get more people out and cycling and using alternate modes of transportation. So we definitely want to see our bike infrastructure continue to build out, and the city's done a great job with that. We'd like to see the surrounding towns and suburbs, Monroe County DOT, start to, you know, fill in the voids around the perimeter of the city as well. You know, I will point out just from a transit aspect, the buses do have bike racks on the front, and something that I will do is because I live right on a bus line, and that was another great point the caller made. If you really are interested in reducing your carbon footprint and using alternate forms of transportation, you really do kind of have to think about making some lifestyle decisions that may involve finding employment closer to transit alternatives and possibly even moving. But we're not forcing anybody to do that, obviously. If the mood strikes you, go for it. So I was going to say I will actually take my bike, ride my bike to and from the bus stop, throw my bike on the bus rack, which extends my ability to travel a number of miles and makes for a nice commute to work.
Hugh Keurig, Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. What do you think?
Well, the caller's right. We don't have a lot of grade-separated bike lanes from streets. But there is one project that the city of Rochester is working on now in conjunction with the university to create a cycle track, as Mike referred, which is a grade-separated track for bicycles that's out of the street. We're doing the first phase of this project now in the design phase, with Hope construction starting next year. That would extend from Mount Hope and Elmwood through College Town, through the medical center, and onto the river campus. But the ultimate goal is to run that east on Elmwood all the way to Brighton, to the 12 corner area. So you, at that point, you then could ride a bike out of the street on a designated cycle track that would go from Brighton all the way to the campuses.
Okay.
Relevant to the previous caller, if he lives out in Henrietta, they have an active transportation plan meeting coming up next Tuesday from 4 to 7. And so if people are interested in getting bike lanes outside the city, that's maybe a meeting that they might want to attend.
Very good. All right, back to the phones. Christian in Pittsford. Go ahead, Christian.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for this program.
Sure.
It's a great program. Enjoy listening to it. One of the things, I'm actually a New York City native, and I moved out here about 3 years ago. One of the things I've noticed is that this city, for the most part, it's, of all the cities across central and upstate New York, it's definitely the one that's most up and coming, but it's still kind of technologically behind. And I'm wondering if there's been any consideration of car services that have worked like Uber, that have worked not only nationally but internationally, as a way to relieve congestion and get people from using their own cars.
I don't know the answer. John
yeah.
Lamb?
The issue with New York State, and that's has legislation pending to resolve the issue of insurance. And right now, apparently, the I think Attorney General has a working arrangement where Lyft and Uber can operate in New York City under some insurance that's available down there that is not otherwise available. Oh, it's a commercial insurance that's available to commercial drivers that's not otherwise available here. And so we could see Lyft return here once that law is changed.
Does that answer?
Do we have any idea?
Oh, go ahead, Christian.
When that law was changed at all?
I'm sorry?
Because it just seems like, do we have any idea of when that law would be changed? Because it just seems like a bit of a limiting factor that we are being denied a full service that is available and works not only in cities like New York City, but I have family in Cleveland. Cleveland much more resembles a city like Rochester, not necessarily in terms of size and population, but in terms of economic growth and its current stature nationally. So I'm wondering if we ever have a chance of that being lifted. It seems to be foolish to make that a limiting factor.
I agree. Lyft actually had a trial run for a couple of months last summer, and they're looking to re-enter this market. So if you agree, contact Lyft and give them your support.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, Christian.
Well, one
Go
comment
ahead,
I would like to make on that is what we're really seeing in this whole idea of Lyft or Uber, where it's a technology-based, is that this has become sort of a transportation option for specifically a younger clientele that are more technologically savvy, that understand that they can make reservations and get transportation in this format easily with little money transaction other than credit cards. I think we're going to see transportation like that become more and more popular and more as an option for getting around town.
It's 844-295-TALK. If you want to call the program toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994 to call the show. As we're talking about Rock Transit Day, that's coming up on June 18th. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow. The organizers are here, Mike Governale and John Lamb from Reconnect Rochester. Bill Carpenter, CEO of RTS, is here. And Hugh Keurig, the Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. They're asking you on Rock Transit Day, June 18th, to think about going the entire day without driving your car. And think about using transit services, think about getting around in other ways. And with Americans driving an average of 37 miles a day, could you do it? That's what we want to hear from you. I see the phones ringing again, and we're going to get back to the phone calls in just a second. I want to ask Mike very specifically. This morning I was talking to the intern for the show, Caitlin Madison, who does such good work for this program. I said, you know, check around and see what are the American cities right now that are considered to be the most forward-thinking in terms of multimodals. And she came back and she said, really, you have to go to Europe. But I said, beyond that, you know, what identifies as kind of moving in that direction? So before I even read a short list that she came up with, what stands out to you, Mike, when you've looked around this country?
Well, I would agree. Definitely, if you can, take a trip to Europe and see some of those cities. Copenhagen, Amsterdam, pretty much any European
city. We talked Zurich recently, yeah.
Zurich, that's right. Norman Garrick was talking about Zurich. But, you know, in the U.S., you don't have to travel very far even. You know, I'm from the New York City area. Obviously, New York and Rochester are sort of apples and oranges, but they've been doing a lot of innovative and wonderful things, converting street space into public, you know, pedestrian space with cycle tracks, bike lanes, bike sharing, all of that stuff, layering on transit and transportation options. It's not just the subway. It's all of the tools at your disposal, biking, transit, that sort of thing. You could go to Minneapolis. It's another cold weather city with great bike infrastructure, great transit, rapid transit. You could go to Buffalo and see what they're doing. I would recommend going to Canada, Toronto, Quebec, Montreal. You know, these are, again, cold weather cities. So you can see, you know, a lot of what I hear are, you know, well, we can't have the bike infrastructure. I can't cycle here. I can't use public transportation in the wintertime because it's too cold. Well, you know, I think there are things that we can be doing. And by looking at these other cities, we can
I think another one that comes to mind is Portland.
Portland?
I think their bicycles mode split is, you know, 20% of the trips are on bicycles in Portland. I'm going to guess here it's probably maybe 1 or 2% would be good.
Okay. Yeah, Portland's on the list. Okay. Anybody else with ideas? Bill Carpenter, John Lamb, what comes to mind when you think of other cities that you say, hey, they are maybe more forward-thinking when it comes to multimodals?
D.C. would be the other city I would add to the list.
Yep, D.C. So here's what I found on the short list, thanks to our intern, Caitlin. D.C.'s bold new transportation plan envisions a city of multimodal streets. That's from streetblog.net. They're trying to bring down some of the congestion that D.C. is famous for. They have 69 miles of streetcars, transit lanes, and improved busing, a new metro rail subway downtown, and an increase in cycling infrastructure. Modesto, California was on that list. They have been applying complete streets principles, which I confess I don't exactly know what that means, but some of our panel is nodding. They've added buffered bike lanes when it repaved it and built more roundabouts. I don't know what the research says about roundabouts, whether that is, Mike, you're sort of kind of wishy-washy.
I'm on the fence about roundabouts, okay. Especially in urban areas. I think they take up a lot of space. The geometry is designed specifically for automobiles, so it can be sort of a pain for a pedestrian to cross through. But, you know, in outlying areas, up on 590 near Seabreeze, they installed some roundabouts, and it seems to be doing nicely.
They're also good for traffic calming, too, and in neighborhoods. You can install a roundabout as a way of slowing traffic down.
Okay. And Vancouver was the other city that was on that list of interesting cities. So interesting that there aren't a whole lot of cities so far on this list. But when we talk about Rock Transit Day and when we think about a multimodal future, you know, I guess what that means, Mike, is that Rochester is still sort of in the middle of the pack and has the potential to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. I think, you know, we may be slow on the uptake, but we're getting there. We're building momentum.
Go ahead, John.
It's not just at Reconnect Rochester that we discuss these issues. I also help liaise with the Rochester Cycling Alliance, and we know of dozens, you know, more than dozens of cities across the United States where that are leading this wave. And you mentioned some of these leading creative class cities, and I think it's really important that we stay on this innovative edge because we can't be another Kodak city. We need to innovate.
Back to the phones. Jean in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Jean.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi there. Go ahead.
I wanted to talk about carpooling. I think a lot of your listeners might be too young, which doesn't mean very young, too young to remember that, you know, that once carpooling to work was very, very common. I started working in the early 80s, and it was just a given that as soon as you started working, you went around the office and found people to carpool with, and we carpooled. And, you know, that was just sort of part of the work culture. It changed so fast. I can almost recall the day that, you know, carpooling ceased to be so common.
Why did it change? Why do you think it changed, Jean?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to, sorry.
No,
it changed, go ahead. I worked for NCR. We were building an IBM PC clone. We got a new manager. The manager gathered everybody in there, and he said, in Ithaca, the quality of life is very high. People are too anxious to get home to their good lives. that he was very dismayed to see the stampede for the door at 4:30. And I just sort of knew that was a big change coming. It really made quite an impact on me that some, you know, that was now the new way of thinking about work. And shortly after, carpools fell apart because all of a sudden people were expected to work overtime and come back in to work and get in early, and you know, carpools fell apart. Now to fix that, you know, I think it would require a working culture change. And I don't know if we can go back to the good old days when, you know, people worked regular 8-hour days. But when we could, then we could carpool. It was easy. And it worked. And that would reduce our reliance on the automobile.
Gene, thank you for the call. And I suspect Bill Carpenter will tell you that at least RTS's vanpooling experiment will tell us if carpooling is completely dead or if there's a chance for it, Bill.
Well, we'll find that out. I think the European cities we've talked about with great public transit, if you think back 500 years, what streetscape you needed for all the transportation, you built the community around that streetscape, and then you introduced the car many years later. Our cities were built up around the car, so the infrastructure is there in our country. And the idea of having a quality of life built around public transportation, the community that you meet in public transportation in a carpool, is just terrific. What's bringing it back oftentimes is either the lower wealth that households have and trying to find a way to save. It's a lifestyle choice. People understand the impact on the environment. And then there's constraints. If I were Joel Seligman, I would want to get rid of all my parking and create more jobs. RIT, I want to put up more classrooms, get rid of the parking lots. So how do we create the volumes of things that will really make a difference? And carpooling and public transportation make a big difference when that scarcity gets there. That becomes another lifestyle incentive for change.
I'm going to try to get through as many calls as we can as the phones are ringing as we talk about Rock Transit Day on June 18th. Kate in Greece. Go ahead, Kate.
Yeah, I wanted to add a city to your list. Salt Lake City and has a light rail. Mm-hmm. If you think of a city like if you ran a light rail tracks from Brockport to Victor and then tracks across that from one side to the other, that would be kind of the way Salt Lake does it. When they put that up in 2001, nobody would ride it. And the day after they opened it, it was so packed they had to find new trains all over the country to put on it, and had to add all of the suburbs fought to get new hubs added. So that is
Kate,
a forward-thinking city that I think you should add to your list.
Kate, thank you very much. Kate, thanks very much. Salt Lake City on the list, and when Kate mentions light rail, Henry wrote to the program earlier this hour and referenced the recent Amtrak accident and said, isn't it about time that we get a rail system apart from Amtrak? You know, that's probably a separate discussion and a separate hour, but Mike, do you think that, you know, does that factor in?
Well, Amtrak obviously is for intercity transit, and, you know, I use it and it's great, but wouldn't it be great if our country, you know, set its priorities so we invested in rail transit to the level it needs to be? I would love to see another track running through upstate New York and that high-speed rail. And, you know, the city's, we're working on a new intermodal station right down here. I'm looking forward to seeing that, so that's great. Intra-city rail would certainly be welcome, too, and that's something that Reconnect Rochester tosses around a lot. There's been a lot of talk about downtown parking and how a circulator, you know, a system that moves people around downtown, moves pedestrians around downtown, might benefit businesses down here, and obviously a bus or a streetcar could be used for that, maybe to connect downtown with the U of R. So, yeah, I'm 100% behind Kate, and I'd like to go to Salt Lake.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Kate, not only that, but we will have a conversation purely on rail soon on this program, and I hope you'll tune in for that.
You know, one of the points I'd like to make real quickly regarding rail, before I came to the University of Rochester, I was a similar position at West Virginia University, which has a personal rapid transit system on their campus and into the community. And for whatever reason, economically speaking, it did not take off when it was originally designed and implemented in the early 70s. But the new technologies regarding personal rapid transit are making that mode much more interesting as a choice versus the heavy rail, intra-city, rapid transit kind of rail system. So that's something as well. I know Ithaca has looked at that. Is
all right, Mark and Irondequoit. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, hi. Let's say hi to John and Mike. I worked with them last year. And I'd like to tell Bill that there's a problem with buses accommodating bicycles. And he's going to have a real problem with that now that he's decided to go public, so to speak.
What's that, Mark? What's the problem?
We've lost Mark. I wish he could have explained what the rest of that comment means. But before the hour is up, what I want to do is make sure we kind of wrap with a conversation about what Rock Transit Day is. You can check out rocktransitday.com. It's June 18th, and at the very basic point of it is to think about not using a car for a day. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow. But beyond that, let's make sure our panel tells us what the incentives are for people who maybe haven't used transit or want to try other modes of transportation. I know there's some events going on, so John Lamb, give us a sense for what's coming up.
Well, one of the best ways to participate is to visit our website and figure out where you can pick up a free bus pass. RTS made for us 1,000, encoded for us 1,000 bus passes that we're giving away in an attempt to reach out to drivers and those who sell them or have never used transit. And tonight, so last week or 2 weeks ago, you spoke with Norm Garrick. Mm-hmm. Well, he's here today, and there he's with the Design Center out touring around Rochester looking at the land use here. But in addition, he's speaking this evening at 7 o'clock over at Gleason Works. And so at 6:30, we will be there, and you can pick up a Rock Transit Day pass and hear Norm Garrick talk about the transit revolution.
That's tonight, 6:30 over at Gleason Works. He presents at 7. He's a cool guy. He's a University of Connecticut professor, but he's also part of a number of national organizations that look at transportation. He lived in Zurich about 4 years ago and had a chance to see what a real sort of multimodal city was like, said that several months into working, he realized he had not seen one person who drives a car to work after several months, which was an amazing story to hear. But that's tonight at Gleason Works. And go ahead, John.
Yeah, and then to encourage people to come out and do things downtown and just make a fun day of it, we have a number of things. Like last year, we have a $500 prize treasure hunt. We have a $700 plus award, a $500 and $200 award, plus pairs of tickets to a Rhinos game for contestants in the street dance competition. And there are many more. Just go to our website. I should mention we have a very popular sidewalk swing dance over at the Rundell Library, Rundell Plaza, in addition to many other events. So if you go to rocktransitday.com, you can, or on Facebook, go to Rock Transit Day 2015. You can sign up for events there and figure out where to get a bus pass.
John Lamb from Reconnect Rochester and the Rock Transit Day Project Manager, thank you for being here. Thanks for sharing with our listeners what's coming up on Rock Transit Day 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Thank you for having us here.
Mike Governale, nice to see you as well from Reconnect Rochester. Thank
Always
you, sir.
Good, Evan. Thank you.
Hugh Keurig, the Director of Parking and Transportation Services at the University of Rochester. Thank you very much, Hugh.
Enjoyed it.
And Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RTS, where there are always interesting things to talk about. And thank you, Bill. Nice to see you.
Always good to be with you, Evan. Thank you.
And for our listeners who might be thinking about carpooling and vanpooling, I'm going to make Bill say it one more time. If you want to think about vanpooling and getting involved with this sort of pilot idea this summer, Bill, they can get involved with you guys where? Online?
Online at myrts.com, myrts.com.
It's a cool idea. We'll find out toward the end of this year if it is viable in Rochester. Short break, and let's spend the afternoon talking about wine and beer next.